on Discovery Paranormal on United Public Radio Network. It is a little after the time. Show's getting pushed back tonight because there's an unbelievable hurricane bearing down on New Orleans. Category one, but, you know, it's making people run about and kind of making everything a little delayed because everybody's busy running amok, you know? So I'm from Long Island originally, and I'll tell you, man, on the island, you get your hurricanes, not as severe as like a Florida, as like, you know, as anywhere that's down south, you know, like New Orleans or whatever. You got to get some serious category 3, 4, 5 hitting you, man. So I think that the biggest one I've ever seen on Long Island was Gloria, which was like a category 3. And the eye came across the island, like out east from where I was, but it was a pretty big storm. You know, I watched a tree branch fall on my neighbor's car right after I told him to move the car. I'm like, you know, I'm like, dude, outside smoking cigarettes, man. And back in the day, I'm like, dude, better move your car, man. I'm like, because I heard that branch like crackling. No, it'll be all right. Like an hour later, it was like snap, boom, right through his window, man. Horrible. Horrible. But hurricanes happen. Halloween happens. Halloween's coming. The election is coming. The election is more scary than Halloween. But tonight, we're going to talk about Washington, D.C. And we're going to talk about the very design of Washington, D.C., and how unbelievably specific the Masons were, the Freemasons, when they designed Washington, D.C., and then how Washington, D.C. had elements of Egypt, had elements of the Templar, Knights Templar. All these things were incorporated. So this is going to make you realize that there are people out there designing things for energy-specific needs, right? And I even looked up if Nikola Tesla was a Freemason, because you would think a dude like that would be. And there was no record of him being a Mason. There's no record of him not being a Mason. So, and this is like a super secret organization. I mean, we know some famous Freemasons like George Washington, people like that over the time. But see, that's a club with me. I'll never join a club that won't have me. You know what I mean? And it's very difficult unless you like, that's the thing too. If you want to become a Mason, a Freemason, whatever, you can't, because you have to be either like nominated or you have to be related. But then I know these guys, like they're like the biggest, dumbest, blithering idiot types. And they're like, my dad's Freemason, so I get in as a Freemason. I'm like, you know, how great could the organization be if like they let these dudes in? And another person that I knew said, you know, men will be boys. And that was kind of how it goes. But it comes down to knowledge. And yeah, you're going to have the Freemasons that are going to be the guys in there that are the blithering idiots. And you're going to have the ones that are in there that know about all kinds of secretive stuff. And humans love to have secrets. Governments love to have secrets. Businesses love to have secrets. It's a secretive type of thing, although not too many things are secret, right? So on tonight's show, we're going to talk about the Templars, right? Because a lot of people don't know. It's funny how you hear it referenced a lot, like on the History Channel, they'll talk about the Knights Templar, Templar Guard, and then people are like, ooh, you know, the Templar Guard. If you say it to somebody, they're like, ooh, try that. You know, like next time you're in a social setting, if you're ever in a social setting again, say, you know, the Knights Templar. And somebody will be like, ooh, you know. But then you don't know anything about the Templar Guards, do you? You know nothing. You know that they were basically the strong arm of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church was supposed to be a loving, caring type of organization that's out there for people, you know. To me, Catholics, it's a cult like anything else. These people reared up, they had a lot of power, and then power is money, money is power, and then they flex that power and do what they want to do. They made people suffer who didn't see the things that they, you know, the way they wanted them to see things. So really. It wasn't about, like, the same people from the Catholic Church you can equate to the same ones who wanted to kill Jesus Christ because he was preaching to people to be free. He wasn't preaching to people to follow. Ah! All right. So, the poor fellow soldiers of Christ and or of the Temple of Solomon, right? Also known as the Order of Solomon's Temple, the Knights Templar, or simply the Templars. Nice band from the 60s, remember Templars? were a Catholic military order founded in 1119. Was the military for the Catholics, right? Headquartered on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem through 1128, when they went to meet with Pope Honorius II, they were recognized by 1139 by the papal bull Omni Datum Optimum. The order was active until 1312, when it was perpetually suppressed by Pope Clement V by the bull Vox in Excelsio. But I'll tell you, that is right, that the Pope thought they were more powerful than they should have been, or they had money or secrets that the Pope wanted to control. And then at that point, the Templars didn't trust that Pope because that order saw all of these popes as being dishonest, and the whole Catholicism thing as being a control thing. So basically, they had a coup. There was a coup going on inside, wasn't it? So anyway, plus, let's not forget about the King of France, right, who owed a ton of money to the Templars, borrowed money. The Templars, all right, let me get on. Instead of me saying this, I'll tell you this. The Templars became a favorite charity throughout Christendom and grew rapidly in membership and power. A charity, right? And you want to give. If you don't give, they'll cut your head off, right? Or you know, think about not having a choice, you know? And then, of course, like a gang, you know, with no opportunity, and these young people growing up, they're seeing these Knights Templar living pretty damn well. They had the best of the best, best places to live, best food. I mean, you know, they went and fought their wars, but they're very powerful, right? And very skilled in their fighting. So they were prominent in Christian finance, the big time, right? The Templar Knights, with their distinctive white mantles and their red crosses, they're out there, the skilled fighters of the Crusade. They started the first bank. The very first time somebody was in debt was because of the Catholics. Think about that. I want you to sit there right now and think about it, right? So non-combatant members of the order, who made up as much as 90% of their members, manage a large economic infrastructure throughout Christendom, developing innovative financial techniques that were an early form of banking, building its own network of nearly 1,000, we could say, banks, right? And fortifications across Europe and the Holy Land, and arguably forming the world's first multinational corporation. So you have people using Jesus Christ and all the stuff he said, all the stuff he stood for. Now they've turned it into this huge organization about money and power, corporation, bank. You're talking about enslaving people and putting people in debt to control them. Ah, okay. The Templars were closely tied to the Crusades. When the Holy Land was lost, support for the order faded. Rumors about the Templars' secret initiation ceremony created distrust, and King Philip IV of France, deeply in debt to the order, took advantage of this distrust to destroy them and erase his debt in 1307. He had many of the order's members in France arrested, tortured into giving false confessions, and burned at the stake. Pope Clement V disbanded the order in 1312 under pressure from King Philip. But if you think that the king could put any kind of pressure on the Pope, you don't understand how things really happened back then. So the king was just some sniveling little nothing, and the Pope was the one with all the power. If you think that Pope could finger that king and crush them, of course they could have, right? But they wanted the Templars gone because they wanted what the Templars had. They thought the Templars were going to become more powerful and rise up, right? So the abrupt reduction and power of the significant group in European society gave rise to speculation, legend, legacy throughout the ages. The military order of Christ considered itself the successors of the former Knights Templar. So Knights Templar became the military order of Christ. Christ military in the same sentence, right? As it was reconstituted in Portugal after the Templars abolished on March 22nd, 1312, the Order of Christ was founded in 1319 with the protection of the Portuguese king, Denis, who refused to pursue and persecute the former knights as had occurred in most of the other sovereign states under the political influence of the Catholic Church. They're basically being hunted to extinction, right? And Portugal was a place that they could go and thrive. Denis of Portugal revived the Templars of Tomar as the Order of Christ, largely for their aid during the Reconquista and in the reconstruction of Portugal after the wars. So it was about money and about power, right? And about what they gave to him to rebuild. Denis negotiated with Clement's successor, John 22nd, for recognition of the new order and its right to inherit the Templar assets and properties. This was granted in a papal bull on the 14th of March, 1319. But still, think about the concept now. I know. What does that have to do with Washington, D.C., Michael? You talk about the Templar Knights. All right. Now I'm going to throw ley lines at you that the Templars had these places geographically that all intersected ley line wise, which ley lines are magnetic lines that circle the earth. And ley lines, a lot of people that are UFO enthusiasts believe that they use the ley lines to get around, as it were, you know. But what they are is magnetic lines, you know. And like the area I'm in right now in upstate New York, there are actually four ley lines that intersect about an hour west of me, you know, over actually over the what we call the Grand Canyon of the East, which is pretty interesting. So anyway, if you look up Letchworth Park upstate New York, and that's pretty much where they all intersect. I will say this. You have a lot of these groups over time, right? A good friend of mine just got a guitar from another guy who died. Really nice guitar. He willed it to him in his will as he died. And he was kind of like on Facebook talking about it a little bit with me and some other people. And I said, you know, like from the antique business, I kind of coined the phrase. Maybe I didn't coin it, but I said it, that we're caretakers of things in this world, you know, and kind of like who could own these things. Like Lao Tzu used to say, who could own the mountains? You know, people name mountains for things, or they try to buy land and whatever. But in the millions of years that go by and, you know, humans, I don't think humans could even make it. Maybe you're not. Who could own these things? Who could really, you know, their names are temporary. The ownership is temporary. We're the caretakers. You have a beautiful Gibson Les Paul, you know, 1967 Les Paul, whatever the hell you got. And you're going to leave it to your grandson, right? When you die, we're the caretakers. Your grandson takes it to a pawn shop and sells it and gets some money so he can go take some girl out, get dinner, not get laid. And then that's the end of the story, man. That's the story right there, I say. Good night. So, we're the caretakers. And powerful groups pass things on to other powerful groups. If you think that the Templar Guard didn't at some point turn into the Freemasons, you don't understand how things work. And handing off the torch. Let's say you have like the Ark of the Covenant. You've heard people talk about it. It's in the Bible. This basically a device that could cause unbelievable destruction, that when people got close to it, they died a horrible death, you know, like what you would know as a, like radiation poisoning, right? So they don't know who gave it to them, what kind of thing. They just know that it's kind of Egyptian. It came from that, that looks like that, acts like that. But they don't know where it is. Out of all the earth, you would think, oh, maybe it was destroyed, melted down, somebody did something. But things like that don't happen to things like that. It goes into the care of people that are sworn to protect it. And since they're sworn protected, they're not likely to go out there and spill the beans. That's why I'm not a Freemason, because I would tell you all what happens in there, man. You know what I mean? Because I'm tired of secrets. You know what? The government's in your face there, in your life there, and your computer, your telephone. You know, anything that you've got, it's all known. There's nothing that's unknown now. You see these people going to court. You ever watch court TV and whatever? And then all their personal crap comes out in court. Oh, here's your laptop. Here's your phone. And you're like, oh, you're like, they got my stuff. Yeah, you're screwed. They get all your stuff. Here it comes. So, but these people are sworn to secrecy, especially the ones who it's a religious thing, you know, whether they're protecting, you know, you've heard about the Holy Grail, right? And the Holy Grail, they didn't really know what it was. It depends on how you look at it. And the research I've done throughout my life, I know that words are very important sometimes, because if you don't have the right word, you're not going to have the right understanding. So when you talk about the Holy Grail, it's been explained to me by many a scholar, people who know what they're talking about anyway, that Grail meant child back in those days. And if Jesus had two Holy Grails, not just one, those Holy Grails would have been children, right? So, you know, you can find materials out there that say Jesus Christ actually survived and didn't die in the tomb. And he got out of there. His followers got him out. And he actually, you know, him, Mary, they had a union together, and they took off, and they had kids, and they went to an area which is now known as France, and then they became like royalty. You believe that? That's one understanding. Kind of punches the holes into a lot of Catholic theories and other type of religious theories of things that people are willing to believe. Like, I know people who don't believe in ghosts, you know, because I'm a paranormal investigator. I'm a paranormal investigator, and it's, you know, when you talk to someone who's non-believer, you can either talk to them and waste your time or not talk to them and whatever. Sometimes you can talk to them, but they're not going to believe no matter what, because their brains are shutting it down, shutting any kind of that knowledge. But they'll talk all day long about the Bible and all the ghosts in there and all the creepy stuff and all everything, man. All everything. You're talking about angels coming down from the sky, all laying places to waste. There's a lot of stuff going on in that Bible, right? I've read the Ethiopian Bible, which has all the books, right? You know, the King James Version is limited. You got a Greek Bible, which has a lot more books in there. Because I wanted to know these things, you know, whether people's heads are at. Dead Sea Scrolls. Interesting reading. It's important to know the civilization that you're talking about if you're going to reference it, and also reference the times, you know, and try to understand in their language and their description of what was really going on, right? Anyway, let's say there is an Ark of the Covenant. Let's say it's this powerful device that could, you know, do all kinds of stuff. If some UFO came down and delivered it, you'd think they'd come and bring it back, you know, but There's people saying it's religious, and there's all these things, and a lot of people put things in religious terms that they can't understand or describe, especially when they're simple type of people. It happens today. They reference it today, you know. Anyway, if there was something like that, and if the Knights Templar owned it, I also have understood that there's a church in Ethiopia where no one is allowed in. No one. Basically, it's just the people from that church who are protecting it. And then there are items in there that they're protecting that had to do with things like the Ark of the Covenant or whatever you want to believe. Let's just talk about protecting things, and when you're sworn to secrecy, right? It's that type of thing. And that belief is pretty powerful to lock people down. Some people are big mouths like me, but you know, because I think people should know things. You know what I mean? I think that if people knew things, society would be much different, and there wouldn't be so much mysticism. Maybe, or maybe the truth is so horribly terrible that people just run amok and go. But I don't know if they could run amok more than what they're running amok now. Maybe. Yeah, probably. So, the Freemasons. The Freemasons have a lot of lodges, grand lodges. They have Freemasons. They have accepted Masons, right? I just stayed next door to a Shriners Hall, right? I was at a hotel in Altoona, Iowa, right? And right by Des Moines. Anyway, right next to the hotel, there's this huge Shriners temple. It's a temple. They've got the pyramids. The building was all set up as pyramid stuff. They've got, you know, sphinxes out there. And then I checked it out, whatever. There was this chick at check-in, you know, the front desk. At one point when I was walking back out to the car, I asked her, you know, about the Shriners Temple, what goes on there. She got all freaked out and weird. And she's like, nobody ever goes there except maybe once or twice a year. And then there's cars all over the place. You don't hear anything from the place, whatever. They go in, and then they come back out again. They leave. I'm like, I'm like, that sounds like something I like. Something I could be part of. I know. I see the Shriners and these Shriner parades, like, you know, they do a lot for, I think, St. Jude's, and they give a lot to kids, which I think is great. They wear those little fez caps, you know, which makes you know they drive those little tiny cars and wear those fez caps. You think dudes like that would definitely want someone like me. Come on, man. I look funny as hell wearing those little hats, driving those little cars, man. But, you know, and I don't even know why they did that. And people got their weird rituals and stuff, you know, sounds more fun than some of your more dogmatic religions out there, right? But so I looked up, how do you become a Freemason? And you don't. I'm not a Freemason, a Shriner. And you don't. You can only become a Shriner as if you're a Freemason. Or of course, if somebody nominates you, but then if it's a secret organization, you don't know who the hell's who, unless you're hanging around outside when they have their meeting, and they're going to be all weirded out and freaked out that you're even there. Hard to get a hold of, you know? So you have those groups, okay? Now, Masons have a strong bond in the United States, of course, and you know, they built the buildings, they did all that. You know, you had Masons, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin was a Mason. You know, a lot of Revolutionary War generals were Masons, right? So the members claim that most signers of the Declaration of Independence were Masons, a claim echoed in a recent movie called National Treasure, a while ago. But modern historians going over 18th century records find only 9 signers still with Masonic symbols and philosophies are deeply rooted in the local history in D.C., especially a connection to the past, definitely, with Masons passing things on, caretakers, I would say, right? So the Masonic influence begins with the configuration of the District of Columbia, right? So it's also apparent in the shape of the Washington Monument, the eastern orientation of the Capitol building, and in many other structures and architectural embellishments. These people designed D.C., Washington, D.C. It's designed as a pentagram. This is why the traffic is so horrible in D.C. It's every zip over here, and that one cuts down there. But these people did this for a specific reason, and it wasn't just to get their kicks out of designing this pentagram. And the pentagram's inverted and the point faces to the White House. How do you like that? So architect James Holbin, who designed the White House, Benjamin Latrobe, architect of the U.S. Capitol, and Robert Mills, who was responsible for the Washington Monument, were all Masons. Cornerstones for all these structures were laid after Masonic parades and dedication ceremonies. Masonic rites were used in the laying of the cornerstones for the first Smithsonian building, the National Cathedral, and the Department of Labor and Department of Commerce buildings. Except for the publicizing of their good works, the group the compromise of Freemasonry do not seek attention. They're very much cloak and dagger and behind scenes. One gets the impression that no matter how public they may be as individuals, they would still be left alone as Masons, right? So I think that, so now you have this group, they've got their own parades, man. They've got their own group. They're laying these stones, but this is the nation's capital. You would think they would, include everybody. Certainly, this was a secret society inside our society. So now, the Da Vinci Code, okay? So if you think about the writer Dan Brown, in fact, Dan Brown wrote a book about Washington, D.C., this very same thing. And he wrote, of course, the Da Vinci Code, So this guy is always looking for stuff inside of stuff. I love people like that because I'm into that, man. I'm into reading between the lines. Sometimes there's nothing to read between, especially when you're dealing with really overly sensitive people, simple, not sensitive. So the Da Vinci Code, it's a self-styled type of symbolic thriller, right? It begins with murder in the Louvre, and it follows the Harvard religious symbologist Robert Langdon as he exposes a centuries-old Vatican conspiracy to conceal the marriage and offspring of Jesus Christ and Mary Magdalene. Okay, we've been talking about just that a few seconds ago. So getting past that, this guy wrote another book about Washington, D.C., like I said, and Masonic rituals and all of what they were doing. And then, the Masons don't take kindly to anything like that, right? And it's very difficult to know what they're about if no one's looking to talk, about what they do. I've never been part of that, me personally. I think that there's a point where every normal average person would definitely share something, just to get off your chest. Right. Look at criminals who are successful criminals. But then, they go years and years and years, jewel thieves or whatever. And then eventually they just admit, I did this and I did that. Or I was D.B. Cooper. One of those. Right. But no, not the Masons, because they literally take a blood oath to protect what they do. So. All right. We're going to get past all of this. I will tell you. The pyramids. We talked about the Templar Knights, right? Let's go back and talk about pyramids, right? Now, the Masons seem to be, at that time, more or less to what they claim to be, a group of men, sexist, some 5 million worldwide, pretty big. You never hear about people claiming sexism against it. We're in a world of Me Too and all sort of stuff. You don't hear about that with the Masons, right? I don't think they have Masonettes or whatever. But so you got 5 million worldwide, about half of them in the U.S., bound together for fellowship and mutual betterment. They make, the papers only when they ante up for things, like they gave a ton of money for Katrina relief. They gave like $700 million a year for charities. So you got to say, wow, $700 million coming from this group, that's pretty good. Or when, an aging temple or lodge in some small town is forced to shut down for lack of membership. People say, well, Masons may not be doing too well. You see a lot of towns with these huge Mason, beautiful Masons. There was one in Ithaca that I went in. This guy made it a nightclub. I was able to go in there and look around. Unbelievable. And the outside of the building looked relatively small. And you go inside and it was like unbelievably huge. It was like Harry Potter's type of tent. This little tent, you go in, this gigantic thing going on. It was weird, but cool. But beautiful stonework. I mean, these people take a lot of pride in their work, right? But, all right. Now, legend tracks masonry back to the Egyptian pyramids when builders hauled the great stones into place in biblical times, when stoneworking masons took up the sacred task of building Solomon's temple. A partially built pyramid is a symbol associated with masonry, right? Later, legends trace the order's origins to the master masons who worked on the cathedrals and churches in medieval Europe, traveling from one site to another in search for work. They purportedly identify themselves as local masons through coded signs. Masonic records trace today's Freemasonry to a London lodge founded in 1717 by men who used the traditions of the Masons Guild as a model for a fraternal organization. They transformed the Masons Square and drawing compass into symbols of moral righteousness. So already you're seeing a group of people that are kind of bonded together by building and creating, right? Pretty interesting situation. In 1733, the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts was born in the Bunch of Grapes Tavern in Boston. Masonry was just another British import until the Revolution began to stir Masons, including George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Ethan Allen, Paul Revere, John Hancock. They were all in the front ranks of the revolutionaries. Makes sense, because you have a secret organization that is closed off to the outside. And then you have, you know, was Washington a Mason? You know, was Paul Revere a Mason? Paul Revere was a silversmith, right? Washington, believe it or not, was a land surveyor when he was younger, you know? But I don't know. It makes sense that these guys would be the caretakers of certain information. But tradition says that there was a lodge meeting there on December 16, 1773, but a few members showed up, and then it was the night of the Boston Tea Party. So most of the people in the Boston Tea Party were Masons, right? Freemasons. So the two if by land lantern signal from Old North Church was flashed by a Mason. That signal sent Paul Revere onto his ride to warn the Redcoats were coming. British patrols stopped him, and an officer put a pistol to his head, but he was released. Perhaps, say, Masonic chroniclers, because he was a British Mason exchange. All right, so you know why? I'm going to tell you the true story, man. I actually know the true story of that. The true story is Paul Revere was on his ride with another guy, right? And they were the members of local militia, and they ran to British troops, and they stopped them. So Paul Revere had the guy with him actually do the ride, and you know, the one if by land, two if by sea type of thing, you know, while Paul Revere hung out with those troops and was basically giving them crap, saying, listen, man, you know, people are going to start multiplying on you right now because I'm with this militia. And the troops knew that. So they actually, in turn, ended up letting him go. So Paul Revere never completed the ride, which a lot of people think he did, but the true history is that he didn't. So Revere was a Mason, of course, a Mason of stature, serving as Deputy Grand Master of Massachusetts under Grand Master Moses Michael Hayes. And, you know, keep in mind, those times, Paul Revere, all these other guys, I mean, there was there were book dealers. These guys were shopkeepers, and they were young. You know, they were young, and they were reaching for that freedom. So I just wanted to add that in there, right? So Masons in the war for independence were many and diverse. Jewish Masons are often singled out in Masonic histories for their roles in the struggle. 24 Jewish Masons were officers in the Continental Army. One of them, Mordecai Noah of, I love the name Mordecai. Mordecai Noah of South Carolina, an officer on Washington staff, donated $100,000 to the war. That's a lot of money, man. $100,000 at that time. Another Jewish Mason, Hyman Solomon, gave $658,000 to the cause. Solomon, who also helped. Don't say Jews have money, man. I don't want to hear you guys out there say that. That's terrible. Solomon, who also helped Madison, Jefferson, and others. I know people think of it. Others defray. I have family who are Jewish, man. They're the ones with the money. But I know, I'm just kidding. But basically, these guys had the dosh to put up, and they definitely saw a reason for freedom, you know, especially at a time in England where the general consensus from the people didn't care if the U.S. became independent of England. They were fine with that. It was King George who had a stick up his ass about the whole thing. So I want to get to the important part, right? Building the Great Monument. Masonic influence continued in the creation of a new nation. 13 Masons signed the Constitution. Masonic symbols appeared on the Great Seal. And in 1793, George Washington laid the cornerstone for the Capitol using a Masonic ritual and wearing a Masonic apron that, according to legend, was embroidered by the wife of the Marquis de Lafayette, also a Mason. So you can tell, they got their gang. That's their group. In 1826, a New York Mason named William Morgan published a book exposing the order's secrets and was purportedly murdered. Morgan's death and a clumsy cover-up ignited outcries against the secretive group. Almost 150 anti-Masonry newspapers sprang up, and the order was condemned by the pamphleteers and the lecturers. Former President John Quincy Adams denounced the order and helped found the Anti-Mason Party. In 1830, he was elected to the House of Representatives on that party's ticket. So then you have the group, the secret group, and then the people who don't like it, who are saying that they're causing trouble, they're causing a problem. If you're going to have a whole party pop up and run under, hey, we're anti-Mason, that's pretty severe, right? So there's something more to the Masons. That's just some group of guys who want to be boys. They're the He-Man Women Haters Club. You know what I mean? So, but anti-Mason party called for the elimination of Freemasonry in America and swept the nation. Lodges shut down, sometimes voluntarily, sometimes by court order. Politicians, once proud of their membership, publicly resigned, because that's politicians. You know. However the wind blows, Joe Biden, just say what people want to hear. However the wind blows, right? Ed Koch, he did the same thing then. So anti-Mason candidates won election to state legislators, to Congress, but Masonry made a comeback. By the Civil War, lodges were flourishing in the North and the South. Soldiers on both sides later told of lying on the battlefield and using Masonic signals to get aid from a foe who responded as a fellow Mason. So yeah, here you're the North, he's the South, and here you are. You get hit with a musket ball, ugh, and you're giving the little Mason hand signal. Like, you know, like these gangs have gang signals, like, you know, little Bloods and Crips and all that. You see people doing their little hand signals. That'd be a Mason laying there with a. But these guys had a bond that went beyond the politics of North and South. You know, they had a bond that was bigger than what even they felt this country stood for. Think about that. A greater good. So the order thrived in post-war years. Masons focused their energies on what would become the great symbol of Masonry, the Washington Monument, right? That's the big one. The cornerstone had been laid in 1848 by the Grand Master of the District's Grand Lodge, who wore George Washington's Masonic apron and wielded the same Mason gavel Washington had used when he laid the cornerstone of the Capitol. It's cool, though. You know what? I'll just say, I was down in Williamsburg, Virginia last year, right, with my dog. And we went to this cafe. There used to be a tavern where George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, these dudes, would all hang out together. have a whiskey, you know, people, chicks walking up and down the street doing their thing, right? My dog got to lay down right where those guys were hanging out, you know. It was just kind of cool to walk the streets, you know. I mean, that's just that. Imagine, like, you're holding the gavel, you know. I mean, you know, I had a couple books from Abraham Lincoln, you know, when I was in the antique business. It's just little books, but they belonged to him, and he used to read them. And just to think that here's a couple of books that Lincoln, I still have them, by the way, that Lincoln, he himself, Abraham Lincoln, held and read, you know. So just kind of cool like that, right? But, yeah, I could see wearing the little skirt. I wouldn't do it, but that's, I'm not a Mason. Probably good, but I'm not a Mason. I would wear something like that. The monument, okay, so the monument to Washington was built along the lines of an obelisk, you know, providing Masons with a link to ancient Egypt. Fundraising problems and the Civil War delayed its completion, which actually came February 22nd, 1885, when in the presence of a large contingent of Masons, President Chester A. Arthur, who was not a Mason, dedicated the monument to the first president. Okay, so let me get past all of that. Now, the Washington Monument is only a small part of the Masonic story. The city is in a wash of architectural illusions and the lore of masonry. When I mean, and I posted pictures of aerial views of D.C. and you can see the pentagrams, you can see the Mason signals. They went through a lot to make it like this. You know, there was a lot of thought and planning. I mean, you know, beyond the architecturalness of a building. This was a whole of something that they were looking to put together, an energy harnessing hole, okay? Like hole, W-H-O-L-L-I, and it's just a big, almost like an antenna to me, anyway. Now, President Truman was overseeing the rebuilding of the White House in 1948. He ordered all stones with Masonic marks put aside. He later sent one to each Grand Lodge in the United States, saying the stones intimately align masonry with the formation and founding of our government. When astronaut Buzz Aldrin, a 33-degree Mason, landed on the moon, and of course, you know, this guy talks about UFOs a lot, man, he carried with him a Scottish Rite flag, which is now in the American Room of the 16th Street Temple under the watchful gazes of Buffalo Bill, Stonewall Jackson, Ty Cobb, Irving Berlin, and Henry Ford, whose portraits adorn the room. Within a few feet of Aldrin's flag is a small replica to the Statue of Freedom that sits atop the dome of the Capitol. The statue looks eastward, reflecting a central tenet of Masonic belief that that's all light, when with it, the knowledge of power comes from the east. Okay. All right. I'm going to say this. Go back to Dan Brown. All right. Dan Brown's Pentagram City. I was just watching a clip about this, and Jim Mars, who used to go on all the time with Joe Montaldo, you know, a great, great guy. He lost his life recently, you know, amazing wealth of knowledge. And I was really actually fortunate enough to be on the air with he and Joe Montaldo a couple of years back. And man, it was a great conversation, just fun listening to Jim Mars. And he knew a hell of a lot about Washington, D.C. and the Masons and the energy behind it. So you want to look at any situation like that. You want to look at the outline of what you're dealing with when it comes to the Great Pyramids, you know, and Tesla. Nikola Tesla's obsession with pyramids and the energy behind them, right? You think that this was lost on the Masons, you know? So now conspiracy theorists love Dan Brown. They love his book called The Lost Symbol. They're building on his super bestseller, of course, that I mentioned earlier, The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons. All right. But, all right. We'll say number one, talking about Washington traffic. You don't need to burn your shoe leather looking for Masonic symbols in the nation's capital. All you need is a Google map and a Sharpie. It's no secret that George Washington and all these other guys and Pierre L'Enfantant and all these dudes, which was the architect of D.C., the layout of the city streets and landmarks, it's all one. It's all triangles and pentagrams, and it surrounds 369, 369, 369. You know, Nikola Tesla was obsessed with the numbers, 369, 369. So all of a sudden, you're starting to see things come together of different ages and different times, but with the same common denominator, you know? So, all right, occult theorists, our favorite people sometimes, have speculated that the 6 points of DuPont Circle, Logan Circle, Scott Circle, Washington Circle, Mount Vernon Square, and the White House form the pentagram, the 5 points of the outer star, and one vertex of the Pentagon, pentagram inside of it, right? The coordinates of the 6 places were recently posted as a clue on Twitter. DuPont, Scott, and Washington Circles all have major streets leading into them, encoding the satanic numbers 666 into the city's structure. Aha! The devil. 666. We know those numbers. We've heard them on horror movies and what time. But 369. These were the numbers that were obsessed about by a genius like Nikola Tesla. If the Tesla cared about that, I think people should take notice, because the guy was beyond a genius. He was an amazing inventor, right? And also saw the future for people, not for himself, not for some corporation, but saw the future. He wanted to give free electric to everybody. Very nice guy. All right. Now, the pentagram may sound a little sinister. A pentagram signal sign actually means spirit redeemed from matter. Okay. We'll leave that there. Because everybody's got their own little what they think it is. That's what it represents, right? Basically you know. But the pentagram, the ancient symbol, occurring in 3 major religions as well as prominent Masonic feature, in the 2006 article, authors Paul Dixon and Thomas B. Allen also noted that 4 points of the White House, you should read that article too, that 4 points of the White House, the Capitol, and the Lincoln and Jefferson memorials form a diamond when linked on the map, the shape of the Masonic logo. So these guys are really hopped up in putting their stamp on everything that they do. They're building the place, right? They have the secret meetings. They have the little secret ceremonies, little parade. Okay. Now, talk about the pyramid on the $1 bill. You see the pyramid on there, right? It's not just a picture. The speculation mounted when the Lost Symbol Twitter feed posted a clue. If you put this coordinates, you know, 29.979, you can look them up. I'm not going to say it. If you put those coordinates into Google Maps, they point to the Great Pyramid of Giza, prompting guesses that the pyramids will play a role in, you know, in the future, right? The pyramid symbol dates back thousands of years, implying not only order and symmetry, but also divine unity. The pyramid on the dollar bill, also referred to as the Da Vinci Code, is a Masonic symbol for the all-seeing eye of God, which dates back to Egyptian mythology and also appears in Christianity as the eye of providence, right? And it's an unfinished temple. It's an unfinished pyramid. Think about that. Symbologists have noted that the dollar's pyramid has 13 steps, while the Latin script underneath reads Novus Ordo Seclorum, or New Order of the Ages. Conspiracy theorists have long believed that the term refers to an organization of globalists seeking to rule the world, and they've linked this belief to Freemasonry. So then you start thinking, okay, that's pretty interesting, man, you know? I think that you can't judge a book by its cover. Or can you? So the cover of the U.S. edition of The Lost Symbol shows the Capitol ensconced in a red pyramid marked at the top with a seal and I reference. The background is covered with ancient lettering or code. The British version also shows the Capitol, but above it floats a mysteriously shaped key marked with the Freemason logo. Given that the working title of the book was the Solomon Key, one assumes that a key will be featured at some point, but it will be a physical, will it be physical or metaphysical, right? So now a symbol researcher, Wayne Herschel, speculated that the Key of Solomon is a forgotten Hebrew puzzle with links to astrology. King Solomon, a mighty leader in Judaism and Islam, reputedly had powers over demons. The Lesser Key of Solomon, a text that emerged in the 17th century describing how to summon and control demonic forces, refers to pentagrams and triangles. So now you're saying, Michael, Washington, D.C. sounds like the gate of hell. You know, like world domination, people submitting to total power, right? You have not just a few symbols of Freemasonry, and it's nice to put your stamp on things. You have a foundation of power and control, right, where people are basically on a need-to-know basis, and these guys are moving in a certain direction that you really can't stop, can you? So, and it's written in stone, isn't it? So now don't forget Washington's obelisk. In ancient Egypt, obelisks symbolized the sun god Ra, as did the all-seeing eye atop the pyramid, right? According to Herschel, the release date of the lost symbol, September 15th, is no accident. That's the forgotten early Christian holiday, the holy day celebrating the rising of the sacred cross, and a day in which the Washington Monument will act as an important astrological marker. There's some mystery about what it might point to, but Herschel thinks it could be related to the Star of David. Brown has hinted that September 15th has symbolic significance, and similarity between Egypt and Masonic symbols makes it likely that the monument will play a part, you know, in this event, right? Okay. So you're saying to yourself, all right, listen, dude, this is all a bunch of bullcrap. These people are just freaks, and they're having fun and, you know, doing things like, you know, Shriners in those little cars wearing the funny hats, right? No, I'm going to say this. People take themselves very seriously. And the people that have these big beliefs take themselves unbelievably seriously. Maybe I don't take myself too seriously, you know. I do have an ego, but it's not the ego you think. It's more me being proud that I'm a master of self-destruction. I'm a master of self-destruction. Yeah, goddamn right. Put that in your Mason pipe and smoke it. All right. Washington, D.C.'s pentagram. It's got also the Eye of Horus and the sun god Ra, whatever. I don't know, guys and eyes and Ra's. Yeah, man. To me, this is what I feel. And there's a lot of people that say the Ark of the Covenant is in Washington, D.C. I don't think that's too crazy, because you have super secure facilities around, you know, around the way. But all right, let's say you believe in that. Let's say it is, whatever. And if they're moving towards this global domination, and, you know, when Barack Obama was in there, the whole world was moving towards that global domination. The one person that screwed it up was Trump. Otherwise, it would have been Hillary would have gone right along. I'm not getting political on you. I guess I am, because politics figure in. This is power. So what happens at the end of the day when these people move for global domination? Do you have more rights or do you have less rights? Are you treated more as an individual or you treat it as some kind of an appendage of a system, you know? Now, you might say, oh, that's all well and good. A lot of weird questions, okay? You love conspiracies. How about this? The CIA is involved in all of this, right? Of course they are. With all great conspiracies, the CIA is involved, aren't they? Some Russian intelligence. I mean, you know, humans are stupid. Also, they're going to blame, well, look what they found a hard drive that belonged to Hunter Biden with all kinds of stuff on there that shouldn't be on there. And they're saying the Russians did it. And it's his. But whatever. People are like that. All right, the CIA. Okay, so the hint so far appears to revolve around the CIA agency's Cryptos monument, okay? A swirling sculpture of the CIA campus whose code it has taken cryptologists decades to break. Made by American artist James Sanborn, perhaps a Mason too, people don't know. They don't know. Those who know don't tell. Those who tell don't know. I got that from a Spike Lee movie, man, you know? Do the right thing. Do the right thing. My favorite movie to watch when it's 95 degrees outside, right? I even turn the AC off and I order a pizza and I get to call the pizza guy Mookie, who shows up, and I give him extra for that. So just to let you know. All right, so now this thing has various codes hidden in it, obviously, and despite the work of more than 1,000 code breakers, the fourth of the sculpture's four segments is still unbroken. One of the three sections have been uncoded, refers mysteriously to map coordinates about 150 feet south of the sculpture in Langley. There are hints that still deeper codes hide in the parts of the sculpture that have been broken so far. Cool, the guy made a sculpture with all this, but what does that mean to you? Okay, the original cover of the Da Vinci Code made two apparent references to the sculpture, even though the book didn't refer to Cryptos. In one instance, the coordinates already solved appeared with a slightly altered number. When asked about them, Brown explained, this discrepancy is intentional. In short, Cryptos is a symbologist and conspiracy theorist dream plot device. Do you believe that? So I think of it like this, man. And I'm going to have to end the show because we're running late. So I've got to get some people on because they got guests or whatever, man. But that's fine. I'll give it to you like this. Me personally, I'm too lazy to go looking for codes and whatever. And you can give me coordinates unless they're to a nice taco shop or a good place where I get some bagels. I don't care. I'm very food centric and I really don't care. When it comes, you're not going to give me any kind of knowledge that's going to be so staggering that I see the world differently from what it is. I see the world that what it is by looking at people and what people do. And you are what you do, you know. So I feel sorry for this world. I really do, because I don't think it's moving into a positive direction. I think that there's the unbelievable suffering out there is getting worse, not better. And the wealth gap between people is getting worse, not better. You know, when all these politicians can be out there talking about people hating on each other because of their skin color and all the stuff and this, that, and whatever, man, let me tell you, you follow the money, you look at that wealth gap, you know. But when it comes to energy, I see what the Freemasons did. I see the type of stones that they used that could easily, conduct electricity, things like quartz, whatever. Quartz is amazing, an amazing stone when it comes to electricity, right? They used to make watches out of quartz. They'll use quartz in watches because when you apply electricity to them, it keeps an even tone where they can set clocks and that type of thing. That's pretty substantial. So I'm going to tell you that Washington, D.C. has an amazing amount of energy. The energy can be used for good or bad. and like we've seen. And but I think that if you're going to design something with a certain intention, it seems like it's all coming alive now, doesn't it? It seems like Washington's in need of a huge exorcism or something. Something where people could go there and just kind of, there was this witches gathering about the election. Witches have been putting their spells on Trump from the beginning. And I don't see how it's worked, you know? Maybe it has worked. I don't know. But if you're going to use the energy, you yourself, go to Washington, D.C., stand in front of the White House, and see what you feel. And yeah, people can be protesting and whatever. Beyond that, I'm talking about the energy of the whole place, because you know that Freemason temple, also in the shape of a pyramid, is at the center of all this, you know, and that's the guarded temple that they don't let anybody in. And then some people have told me that the Ark of the Covenant's in there. I'm like, really? See, but I don't know if I believe in any of that, because I don't think people are good at keeping secrets. I guess some secrets, yeah. Even taking a blood oath, but come on, man. Anyway, I think I'm going to end the show there, because I think someone's coming on with somebody else. And whatever, man. I don't want to hang anything up. This is Michael Angley on Discovery Paranormal, and I will see you guys in the next show. After Halloween, happy Halloween, Halloween Saturday. You know, we're doing a big pre-Halloween show on Friday, and I don't know, a whole bunch of hosts, man, the hosts of the network, everybody pretty good, everybody pretty cool. We'll all be out there sharing stuff, sharing our Halloween haunted stories. I myself will be going live later on in this hotel room that I'm in, because there's been something around here trying to get in contact with me. I see it. I feel it. I don't know. It's supposed to be an old hospital, but I think that it's probably just, you know, people who died over the years in this old hotel, right, which is now a Holiday Inn, of the haunted Holiday Inn. But we'll see if I can get any activity, you know, or if anybody wants to come forward and say anything. I'll be doing EVPs and that type of stuff. So you can catch that on YouTube. I have no idea what time I'm going to do this. It's going to be like in the middle of the night or whatever. So I will see you guys. Have a good, safe, healthy Halloween. And then I will also see you on the show. Oh, yeah. And you're not going to see me Tuesday, because Tuesday is going to be election day. So we're going to be live here with me and Joe Montaldo and all kinds of this, that, and whatever. We got people. We got people,
yes,
coming
live.
On.
Very
Who's
live.
Going to be Joe? Joe, who's going to be on the show, on our election show, a big,
you know, we're
big
gonna,
election
we're gonna,
show?
We haven't picked everybody yet, so we're going to bring at least six, maybe eight. We'll see. You know, we got to give an old broadcaster a call, too, see how she's doing down there in D.C. and see if she's up for a little debate. But, no, I don't know. I know we'll have some out-of-country people. We'll probably be three or four from the U.S., maybe a couple more. We'll see. But, you know, guys, we're going to start early, run late, and we'll see who's crying and who's not at the end of the night.
Last time, Hillary Clinton, I thought she was going to win. You said Trump was going to win.
Well, you know what's funny about this is I get the same sense from this election as I got from that one. When you see 40,000 people stadiums filled up with 4-mile-long lines waiting to get in, and then you go see Joe Biden and crickets standing out front of his town halls. He can't even fill a town hall up. Even COVID style, he can't fill a town hall up. And I'm thinking, well, I said, obviously, I'm missing something here. And then, you know what the number one trending thing on Google is today, ladies and gentlemen? How do you change your vote after you've already voted?
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of liberals were a little nervous that they voted for Biden all of a sudden. There's been a lot of stuff coming out about Biden. So, you know, we might preempt my other show tomorrow night if the hurricane don't shut us down, do a little politics. But I don't know. We got Zeta coming tomorrow night, so we'll see what happens. You already to
win. You sound nervous, man. But you would just say the Category 3 was nothing. You'd like to go to the beach and hang out, man, with your beach chair.
I mean, this would be interesting. I mean, we're not really expecting more than 70, 80-mile-an-hour winds, if that. We might only see 60.
But you're on the bayou. What does that mean for you?
Honestly, I'm about 175 yards from the Gulf of Mexico in Bay St. Louis. That's about what I am.
Yeah.
I live on Mojave Bayou, and from straight down from my house, there's a little curve, and straight down from my house is the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, you can literally stand on my bayou and look down there and see the sunset and the Gulf from my yard. It can get crazy down and get intense, and I'm going to have to move my cars. We'll move both cars up by the bridge because it'll probably get – they're saying up to 8 feet, which would probably put about 4 foot of water in my yard. So, you know, I had to go pee rogging in my yard. I could sit on my steps and fish and shit, you know. I'll have to pull my lawnmower up my stairs, though, so I don't get flooded out my riding lawnmower. It's a bit. Last time we had a mini flood, I came outside to get something. I see my ice chest floating down the bayou, man. Brand new ice chest is floating down the bayou. Like, look at that son of a bitch go. Psh, out to the Gulf of Mexico. Somebody got a free ice chest somewhere. I was like,
wow.
I went and pulled all my crab traps out a little while ago. But anyway, I know we got to get out of here because.
You ever get alligators back there, man, in the backyard?
Yeah, we do from time. Well, when we get fresh water, like we're going to get from this storm, we'll see a few.